Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Toby Howell. And Toby is a writer for The Morning Brew. And we connected on Twitter because, one, he's an incredible writer. He's very witty, always coming up with new, interesting ways of looking at the world. Two, he runs The Morning Brew Twitter account. So he's responsible for 150,000 followers and sending timely business insights to those 150,000 followers in a witty manner. And then lastly is Toby was doing 75 Hard, and it's obviously a program I've spoken at length on this podcast about, so I had to figure out and learn about Toby's process and what that was like. So in this conversation, we went deep on all those topics and hopefully gave you some ideas to think about with growing your Twitter or potentially 75 Hard and getting your fitness in check. So really fun episode for me. This episode is brought to you by MarketingExamples.com, and Harry Dry takes the most interesting insights from business, from media, and he compiles those into a really digestible package that you can check out on his website, marketingexamples.com. Harry's a previous guest of the podcast. He's a great writer. He's an incredible marketer himself, and he'll also be coming out with a course sometime in August, which I'm really excited to check out, but he has so much valuable free content and free examples that no matter what you're doing, whether you're selling attention, you're selling a product, you will find something on this website that will help you become a better marketer. So that's marketingexamples.com. And if you enjoy that, subscribe to his newsletter. It is incredibly valuable. I think he has 50,000 people on that. So a lot of people enjoy it, some very high level people. And I'm incredibly gracious to Harry for sponsoring this episode. If you have any thoughts or feedback about this episode, or you have any interest in sponsoring the podcast in the future, let me know at Hey Danny Miranda. I'm looking forward to your feedback, your thoughts about this episode and the podcast in general. And let's get to the conversation with Toby Howell.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Let's take it back to get started to September 10th, 2017. And talk about your game-winning goal against Holy Cross. You take off your shirt. You have a header in overtime. And explain that moment to us, because in doing research for this conversation, I was like, wow, this Toby, he's crazy. I love it, though.
You did do a deep dive. Yeah, that is a good moment in my history as an athlete and as a person. But yeah, so I had transferred to Brown that year. I had played 2 years of soccer at Marquette University and then transferred in my junior year. And that was our first home game ever. And it was actually against the coach of Holy Cross, with someone who I had been friends with for a while. Like, he's from Holland, and like, I had traveled to Holland with him. And like, he had like recruited me a little bit to play at Holy Cross. But so, yeah, it's over. I think it was it was the first period of overtime. I was actually just about to be subbed out. Like, I saw a guy coming in to sub me. Someone gets the ball on the right side. I find myself just wide open in the box. And I actually try to head it back like near post, and it kind of skims off my head. So it looks like this perfect flick header into the bottom corner. And then I remember like it going in, turning around. I'm like, oh, I got to do something. Like, I was never a celebrator. Like, I've never celebrated goals in my life. And so I'm like, shirt's coming off, right in front of like the coach who I knew, like dogpile right in front of his bench. So yeah, it was a pretty good moment. And then after the game, he came out to me and he like brings me in, like says, Hey, fuck you. And I was like, I'm sorry, Marco. Like I had to do it to you. But yeah, so that was quite the moment in soccer lore.
Yeah. How has soccer played a role in your life? You know, that's something playing collegiate level is a pretty big deal. So how has that played a role in your life in general?
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, as any kind of college athlete can tell you, like it completely dominates your entire life until it doesn't. So like my life was all soccer from literally like from when I could walk to my final year in college. And like for a while, I thought it was going to extend beyond that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's definitely like I sunk a lot of time and a lot of effort into becoming a good soccer player. And I mean, I didn't end up playing professionally. So like you could say, so like, did it work out? And I just keep finding all these things in my life that I realize I learned from soccer. And it's like small things, like the way I run off the ball, like it's different from how other people treat it. Like I realized that the way I run off the ball is kind of how I think about like Twitter or how I like present problems is like, I see things from a different angle and like rely on a different perspective in order to like achieve an end. So like, I've been making all these crazy connections post soccer career that I didn't know were like skills I were developing while I was playing. So it's definitely been left a lasting impact on my life, as like any athlete would tell you.
So you were running off the ball, and you running off the ball is similar to you on Twitter. How? Bridge that connection for us.
Yeah. It's just like, so the way I would run like extremely optimistically off the ball. So like if I was on like the left side, I would make this like 40 yard diagonal run, like to end up like on the right side, just because like, how are you going to mark someone that has traversed 40 yards? Like that's a lot of communication to like pass off along the back line. And it's also just like an extremely optimistic run. Like that's like a Hail Mary run all the time, but I would always do that and always try it, because like the worst case is you don't get the ball, and the best case is you score, basically. So like the risk reward was always just like, why wouldn't I try this like kind of absurd run? And like, I remember I've had like coaches, I've had like my parents saying like, why are you running? Like you're not getting the ball. Like you don't get the ball. And I'm like, yeah, but if I do, like, so it's that risk reward. And so like same thing, like on Twitter, like so many people are kind of scared to try something or to put something out there, to like try something that might come across as looking dumb or stupid. But like if it lands, then it just has enormous upside. So it's just like a great way to approach social and just like life in general, is you might as well try it, because like, especially if the risk reward is, if the risk is you looking dumb and the reward is up like a hockey stick, like you might as well, you just have to get over that hump of maybe looking dumb from time to time.
How have you been able to get over that fear of looking dumb? Or was it something that you've just always had?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm fully over it, but like that again goes kind of back to like the soccer thing. Like I realized I was doing that all the time. Like I probably look dumb from time to time, or like if you try something, but it's not something where I'm immune to. Like everyone feels like they don't want to look dumb in front of people. Like that's just a basic human characteristic. But yeah, it's just kind of reps, just like with anything else, just putting in reps and realizing that looking dumb is not looking dumb for maybe it's like 10 minutes. Like the internet moves so quickly, is not something that's should dissuade you from trying stuff. So yeah, it's just kind of like reps and developing that thick skin, and something I'm constantly working on.
Was it difficult for you when you stopped playing soccer, because you've built up yourself as your identity is a soccer player for so long, and especially at that level, like I said. So now you're not doing it anymore. And did that hurt you identity wise?
Yeah. I mean, again, a question that is not unique to just me, that many athletes face. I've always been kind of lucky. Like, I go back to high school, I was always the kid who would sit at different lunch tables, basically. Like, I could go and sit with, like, I don't know, I don't want to break people down to like these convenient buckets, but like the nerds, like whatever, the athletic people, because like I had those different sides of my personality. Like, I was like very much have nerd qualities. Like, I'm obsessed with, like, I get obsessed with things very easily. So like, whatever those obsessions are, like, there's usually one or two of them going on. Like, it's never just, it was never just soccer for me. So like, even though I was obsessed with soccer, I was also obsessed with golf. I've been obsessed with poker. Like, I'm obsessed with chess. So like, I've always had different outlets all the time. So like, I never got to the point where I was fully consumed by my identity as an athlete. And so like, when it ended, there was like a month or two period where I was just like, it was honestly just like some regrets, because I'm like, God, like, I could have been better. Like, I could have like done more with my time. But then after that, like, it wasn't like I didn't know who I was anymore. It was just, I learned what I learned through that phase. Don't regret it. Don't regret doing it at all. Like, maybe regret not doing it as well as I could have. But yeah, I never got kind of fully subsumed or consumed by that as my identity.
What were some of those things that you regretted, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, I mean, there's just always, you always look back and like, I can still remember goals or stuff that like I missed, or just like, I realize now what like hard training like actually is, and like what discipline training is, and how I never really fully committed to it in a way that I needed to, which again, everything comes with trade-offs. Like, if I had fully committed, like, maybe I wouldn't have these other facets of my personality. So it's not like a ton of regret, but I just feel like I could have been a better player than I was. And I could have just elevated my game if I had really given it my 100%. But again, yeah, everything comes with trade-offs.
Yeah. And you take that to the next part of your life and realize that if you could have gone harder in this facet, if I want to be a better writer, then I'm going to just go harder writing. And what you touch on about high school, where you're friends with all these different people, it reminds me kind of how you utilize Twitter. You're friends and with all these different people, and it's very hard to group you in one bucket because you have different avenues to your personality. So how do you utilize that in your Twitter strategy?
Yeah, that's, again, because a lot of the advice you get on Twitter is like, find your niche and like double down on that niche, and just like, that's how you grow your audience, is by aiming very small. But like, people are not very, like, people don't like being put into niches, basically. Like, you don't want to just be this one person known for this one topic all the time. And so like, David Perel, Twitter guy, he has a term like, your personal monopoly. And I like 100% agree with that. Like, your life perspectives and like who you are as a person are going to lend themselves to creating a perspective that no one else holds. So like, my experiences as a soccer player, my obsessions as like a poker player, as a golfer, as a chess player, like, that all combines into a very unique perspective, and like, boom, that's your niche. And like, your niche ends up becoming yourself. You own a monopoly over like this very unique perspective. So yeah, it's definitely like a battle between, you want to establish yourself as someone who's like an authority on some subject, but you also don't want to pigeonhole yourself into one topic. So it's just drawing on your experiences to create a unique perspective that people want to follow as a holistic thing, instead of just like as a social media guy.
Yeah. And you've gone viral so many different times. And one thing I want to talk to you about on Twitter specifically is like, how do you not let that go to your head? Like you have all this dopamine rushing to you and you have incredible writing and incredible tweets. So it's like, how do you get things done when you have a viral tweet?
That's a question that comes from, I mean, I appreciate the insinuation that I'm just going viral all the time.
It's the way it looks on this end.
Right. I'm definitely like human. And so I'm not going to say like, I mean, there's people who say like, I just have notifications turned off and like, that's how I control it. But I'm not one of those people. And like the first time that one of my tweets was kind of going viral, like all the dopamine was flooding in and like exactly what you'd expect. Like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, look at all these followers, look at all these people. And so, but then the next time it happens, it's like a little less, I mean, it's literally, I sound like a druggie, but like the high is not as intense. But it's true. And actually like, you don't want the lows to be too low. You don't want the highs to be too high. So it's just been kind of a learning as I go process of not letting it like go to my head. And like it does from time to time, but it's just something like you learn and manage. And I don't have like specific strategies to, I mean, like the best strategy is I like working out and like getting away from my phone. Like that's an essential aspect of like maintaining a balance. I've realized it's just like, you do have to put it away from time to time and just unplug.
Yeah. You bring up working out. So it gives me the perfect opportunity to ask you about 75 hard and the challenge that you've taken on. I mean, my aunt sends me this email, shout out Aunt Tara. She sends me this email last week, like, hey, this guy, Toby, Morning Brew, he's doing 75 hard. Didn't you do this? And I was like, yeah, I'm actually interviewing him next week. So that was pretty funny. But so 75 hard, break it down for us. What is it? Why'd you decide to do it? And we'll go from there.
Yeah, it was created by David Frisella. I first came across it on TikTok, actually. Like it became like a TikTok challenge. But it's 75 days of every single day you have to work out twice a day for 45 minutes, one of which has to be outside. You have to drink a gallon of water every day. I literally have like full Brita next to me right now. But so drink a gallon of water every day, stick to a diet of your choosing, but with like no cheat meals, no alcohol, and then read 10 pages of a nonfiction book every night or every day. And then there's also, I've seen it without like a cold shower portion, but there's also like the cold shower. And so like all the versions I had seen like didn't include that, but now I'm realizing that like that might be part of it. Like you have to start the day with the cold shower.
No, it's not part of it.
Okay, good.
That's phase one. That's what I'm currently doing right now on day 26, where you add a cold shower and you add additional powerless tasks and you add visualization. But
gotcha.
Continue. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, you have to do all those tasks every day for 75 days. And if you miss one, then you have to start all over. And then I started it just because like my friend, he was also like a college athlete, but like after college, like definitely went the way of just like got fat. Like he wouldn't mind me saying it. Like he says, he's like, yeah, I got really like, he just put on a ton of weight and just like, wasn't being like healthy. Mm-hmm. And so he said like, yo, I want to do this 75 hard. And that day I was like, all right, I'm in too. And just like, I literally started that exact moment, doing it. And so, and I had been thinking about doing it for a long time. Like I had come across it on TikTok before, but like, it was just something about him starting it that like made me decide to take the plunge. And yeah, it's been absolutely awesome. Like I can't, it's just one of my biggest things has actually been like, it's been tough for me to stay consistently disciplined. Like I get obsessed with things like, but that obsession is driven by like passion and just like wanting to get better. But it's not like, I don't think it's actually a sustainable type of motivation. And so for whatever reason, like 75 hard has pushed me more towards like a a consistency that I definitely didn't have before. And it just, there's something about it that just like, there's no other option other than to complete the task. Like there's no, there's, I've like traveled, I've been like working out in the hotel room at literally midnight after like a full day of travel, but like there's literally just no other option in my mind, which is just so nice that I don't even have to fight with myself. Like it's going to happen. Like the workout's going to happen. So yeah.
Yeah. And what you touch on brings up the biggest thing that stood out for me, which was that I realized immediately how many excuses I was making for myself and how many times I'd say, oh, I'll just work out tomorrow. It's no big deal. Or how I'll just do that tomorrow. I'll just read when I want to. Mm-hmm. So that was the biggest thing of the lack of options of like, you have to do this. Mm-hmm. So what's been the biggest thing that surprised you about 75 Hard?
The biggest thing, that's a good question. I think it's been how much I've enjoyed the outside aspect of it. And like, that's something that when I first started, I was like doing, like I do a walk, like that's usually my outside workout. And I'm like, well, this is like kind of dumb. Like I should be doing more, like I should be running or something. And two, like, is a walk, like a 45 minute walk, like what's that really doing? But now it's just like, I turn a podcast on, like get outside. Like I usually do it in the evening and it's just like an awesome, sometimes I just listen to music too. And it's just like, I've never had like a consistent 45 minute period kind of like to myself. And it's just been like this awesome thing. And like, I can work through things, you're outside. Yeah. And so it's probably been how much I've enjoyed the outside component of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That was also my aunt's biggest takeaway from doing the program as well. So speaking on that topic is like, how do you manage? You're so plugged in. Your job is basically to write tweets for the Morning Brew. And it's like, how do you manage staying plugged in, knowing all the sources and figuring out all the latest podcasts, but also spending time for yourself and not spending, I don't know, 16 hours on your phone a day? How do you balance that?
I'm been lucky because my main role at the Morning Brew right now is actually still like writing the newsletter. And so right. I do that 3 days a week. Like that was what I was originally hired for. And then like the social media was tacked on. So like creatively, I get to kind of switch between newsletter writing and like social media-ing. On like a weekly and daily basis. And so like that helps keep kind of like my creative muscles firing in different directions. And then as for just like, is it good to be on your phone and good to be plugged in for that long? Again, it's been a process. Like I definitely went through a phase where it got to be too much for me. And like, I was definitely too plugged in. And just like the longer I've been doing it, the less like the dopamine hits are hitting, which is, I think it's a good thing. Like you just become less dependent on like having each tweet do super well, just because like now you've tweeted 1,000 times instead of like the first 10 times, like everyone was super exciting. So just like through time, it's kind of dulled a little bit. Yeah. And then 75 Hard has definitely helped, like having at least 90 minutes, more like 100 minutes if you include the reading component, of like you're forced to not be on your phone. Like those two 45 minute exercises, like I'm not on my phone. So yeah, it's been a balance and it's been a process, and I'm definitely better now than I was at the beginning. But yeah, I don't like being one of those people who say like, oh, I know how to completely work in social media without falling victim to like the perils and traps of social media. Like I definitely do, but I'm also working through them and hopefully getting better at managing it.
Yeah. I love that transparency because I think it's so important. Like we're all just figuring this out. Our parents did not have social media. No one 10 years ago really was working as a social media consultant or working on social. We're the guinea pigs and we're figuring it out for the first time. Mm-hmm. So for us to have all the answers doesn't really make sense.
For sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you switch from social media to newsletter writing, and you do that constantly. What's the major differences that you see, even though you're writing for the same brand?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, a lot of it is bound by like the medium. And so when you're writing for the newsletter, it's going to be 150 to 300 words. It's going to be a synthesis from a lot of different sources. It's got to be like extremely factually and like grammatically correct. And you just, when you're writing a story like you, that you know is going to be sent out to almost 3 million people, like it's definitely that those constraints breed a sort of creation that is much different than firing a tweet off, basically. So like Twitter is, you're going to get instant feedback. It's a smaller audience, but it's still large. The language you use is going to be much different than the newsletter. Like everything that you would imagine the difference between longer form and like, and then tweeting, those are like vastly different creative muscles. So yeah, it's like the old saying, like the medium is the message. Like the mediums dictate a different sort of creative process each time. I would say that like my Twitter creative process is like being the like annoying kid in class who just like pipes in with like quips with like on something someone says. Like that's a lot of what I'm doing, is just playing off of what someone else is saying, versus writing for the newsletter is like almost writing a stand-up comedy routine. Like we have joke setups and like joke payoffs, and like it has to have a flow. So yeah, it's just much different. One's like improvisational and one's more like stand-up comedy, if you will.
How does feedback play a role in both of those?
Yeah. So feedback on the newsletter side is absolutely essential. Like we have a small writing team. Like there's 3 daily writers and then Neil, who's our managing editor. And so everything we write is going to get passed over by one Neil. Like Neil does an initial edit and we'll play off each other. And then often like in the writing process itself, we'll sometimes ask for help writing a joke or something like that. I mean, Neil's famous thing is like, he's like, I'm so good at setting up jokes, but he never can like have the punchline basically. So like we work a lot in like the rule of three, where like you have a list of 3 things and like the first 2 are one thing, then the 3rd thing's like the punchline, if you will. So he always has these lists of like 2 things. He's like, can someone help me fill that like last little like punchline bit? So yeah, from the writing perspective, it's very collaborative and there's like a lot of eyeballs, because you're never going to write something as good by yourself as you will when multiple people have looked at it. And then on Twitter, it's a different process, because you tweet and then you could have 30 comments instantaneously, like giving you feedback. They're not always people whose opinions that you need to value. So like the opinions of my coworkers, like that's, I value it incredibly highly because they are valuable. And then Twitter sometimes is full of just not valuable opinions. So it's just like figuring out how to sift through and like know who you want to listen to, like know which opinions are valid. But that's not to say that I don't look at what people are saying about us or responding to our tweets. Like that is valuable feedback, but I just take it more with a grain of salt than I would someone whose opinion matters a lot to me.
Yeah. What's more difficult, writing a tweet or writing a blurb, the 300 word blurb?
That's a good question. I mean, a story takes longer. Like it's going to take between like 30 minutes to an hour, or sometimes more, just because you have to be more precise. But honestly, like writing a good tweet it's kind of like capturing lightning in a bottle. Like it's not easy to write something that goes viral or like have the right combination. It's a little bit like alchemy. Like you're never sure. There's some science to it, but like you're never really sure what's going to happen. So like there's definitely a lot more experimentation. Like this goes back to like my crazy running off the ball. Like it goes a lot back to the experimentation, and I try to channel more of that on Twitter versus on Instagram or on the newsletter is it's more buttoned up and you can think through things longer. So it's just different muscles. I wouldn't say one's more difficult than the other. They're equally different in their own ways.
How do you deal with a breaking news story or a trending topic? Because I know GameStop recently, that was a huge day for you guys because you handled that so well. How do you approach a trending news event at running a huge account like that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is kind of saying, one is like, is this relevant for our audience? Like, is this something that's going to get our audience riled up? And like, we'll use GameStop as the example. Like, the answer was 1,000% yes. Like, that's so right in our sweet spot. So like, once you kind of check that box off, now it's about just like, this is what Twitter was made for, basically. It's like reacting in real time to events that's going on. And so just turning on that brand voice, like jumping in with a perspective or an opinion or an angle that maybe you haven't seen, or like that's unique to Morning Brew, like that's going to be our sweet spot. And a lot of it is me just consuming what other people are saying and then like synthesizing that and putting it out in a different way. So like in those moments, I definitely like leverage the timeline as a whole. Like I'm not like looking at specific tweets and saying like, I'm going to do this. It's more just like consuming, if everyone's talking about the same topic, like consuming all that, synthesizing that really quickly. And then being that kid in the back of the class who just like puts out a funny quip. So yeah, it's essentially just like a very in the moment, in the flow type of process. But yeah, when those stories are going down, like if it checks that first box, if it hits our audience's sweet spot, then I'm all over it. Like, you know, I'm going to get in there.
Yeah. And going back to how you started and got the job for Morning Brew, because I think it touches on the way the world is moving in such an incredible way. It's like the world used to work a certain way and now it works this way or is starting to move this way. So talk a little bit about how you got the job to begin with.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'm happy I got the job the way I did. Like it all kind of builds towards a certain sort of like brand that I've built. But so right out of college, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Like, I'm sure this story resonates with a lot of people. But so I moved to Portland, Maine, actually, and started working for like this small sports marketing startup. And the biggest skill I kind of developed there, like it was a really small operation, like four of us. And a lot of what I was doing is like reaching out to brands through like basically cold emailing them or like cold DMing people and saying like, hey, I'm representing this esports team. Like, do you want to buy a sponsorship deal with them, basically? And so one, I weirdly learned a lot about esports. Like, that was like, I got deep into that world. And then two, I just got really good at cold emailing because I just sent so many. And like, when I first got there, I was like using a template and just like firing out just because I was trying to do as many as possible. And then I just like, all right, like screw it. I'm going to try to like get responses from people. Like, what am I doing? And so I just started playing around with different formats and whatnot. And around the same time I had started reading The Brew and I was like, okay, finally I have something that like, this is a place where I'd want to work. Like, this is my humor. Like, I know I can write like this. So then it started becoming, okay, how am I going to find my way into The Brew? And so I tried various like leveraging connections and like, I got in contact with two people at The Brew, but it never really amounted to anything. But I had this idea for like, they should have a sports newsletter for the longest time. Cause I was living in the sports world from like a sports background. And so I had actually like written this email to Austin and Alex, cause basically saying like, hey, I have this idea for a sports brew. And I just like had it in my notes section forever. And then like Austin, who is a co-founder of Morning Brew, like tweeted out, like, we're looking for some position. I don't even know what position it was. And then like, for some reason I saw it on Twitter and I'm like, all right, this is like the sign. Sent the email to Alex and Austin. DM'd Austin and said like, hey, just like sent you an email basically. And then like got a response immediately, just said like, just saw it, forwarding it to like our head of content and like Neil. And so like, it went from my notes section to like an email to like in contact with the people I needed to talk to in like the span of like 2 minutes. But like, also I had worked really hard on that like email and like crafting that email in the past. And then it was just sitting there waiting for like the right moment. And so then after that, I actually, so they said, this is a cool idea. Do it, like, let's see the example. And I had not written an example sports brew yet. And so like that night I stayed up till like very, very late, spending all this time like crafting this sports newsletter in the Morning Brew tone. Reading it back, it's like three times longer than it should have been. There was like way, way too much content, like way too many words, but sent it to them over the next day. They looked at it, said, we like it. Like we like, they kind of hedged their bets. They're saying like, we're probably not going to hire you to write a sports newsletter. Like that's not the direction we're going. But like, we do want to look at you for, we are hiring for a newsletter writer position. And so then literally they said, you want to come out to New York and like that weekend. And so on the bus ride, I actually wrote another newsletter for them to look at. And yeah, kind of, they liked that one. And the rest is kind of history. Like interviewed, went well. And I was at the brew within a month, basically, from when that cold email was sent. So it was definitely like one of those moments in life where I quickly went from a place where I didn't really want to be to, I saw a place I did want to be, like made a plan to get to that place and then got there. And which was like one of the first times that I really, really had a desire to like know what I wanted to do with my life, if you will. And so it was, I'm eternally grateful for them for like making it happen, but it's awesome that I'm here now.
Yeah. How did you have the sureness of yourself that was the direction you wanted to go down?
A lot of it was just, I could totally picture myself there. And I mean, people would say like, this is how you write. Like, and I mean, I was an English major in college. So like I did write, and like, I had a very good sense of like what my preferred writing style was. And so when someone like showed me the brew, I was like, this is me. Like I could do this. And then I did do it. Like I showed them I could do it, and wrote like a full newsletter for them. So yeah, there was just something resonated, and I literally could just see myself writing this, like creating this product. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of lucky. Like, thank goodness someone sent me the referral link and like got my first brew. But yeah, it's definitely something that is part luck, but just like, also once I recognized that's where I wanted to be, like, I'm glad I did all I could to get there.
Was that the first time you'd realized the power of Twitter?
Yeah. I mean, I've been like a Twitter fan for a long time. Like there is a tweet, like if you go back to 2014, there's a time where I was like, I want to become Twitter famous. And like, I literally was tweeting that, like, I'm going to do this. And like, sent out like all these horrible tweets, like I don't even know what I was trying to do. Just like thought boy stuff. But so it had been in my mind for the longest time. Like, I want Twitter to be a place where like I leave a mark. And then, yeah. But then even when I joined the brew, it wasn't until I had been kind of playing around with their social media for a few months where I wrote a thread just saying like, here are a few things I learned from running Morning Brew social media. And like that literally just went, that totally changed my trajectory again. Like I went from 600 followers to like 4,000 followers in one night. It was actually funny because we were trying to get to 50,000 followers on Morning Brew at the time. And that tweet like took us over the threshold. And I remember Austin like slacking me and saying like, who, like, I never would have thought like a tweet from your personal account would have like given the Morning Brew like 2,000 followers, blah, blah, blah. Because yeah, I mean, I had no following before that. And then, but again, just like you put something out there, you just never know. Like, it's unlimited upside on Twitter. Like, you just really never know who's going to see it, like how it's going to perform, and like what opportunities will be created from it.
Yeah. What has Twitter taught you in the past since you've started putting stuff out on a regular basis?
Yeah. I mean, Twitter's taught me a lot. It's basically just taught me how to, the value of sharing your perspective. Because like that first thread, I had to be kind of encouraged to write, like Neil said, you should do it. Like, just put it out there. And like, that's a main thing that I've been preaching now for the last year or so, is just like, I say, let it rip all the time, because it's just truly like the motto that will probably get you the furthest on social media, is like, there's literally no opportunity for growth if you don't post, if you like don't do anything. So the advice is always let it rip, see what happens. And I mean, it's good life advice too. Like, you might as well, like, why not try the crazy run? It all leads back. Yeah. And so then the other thing it's taught me too, is just, I always saw people saying that Twitter is this great means to connect with people. And like, when you're someone with not a lot of followers, you're like, all right, like, what the heck are they talking about? Like, blah, blah, blah. But I've had like crazy, crazy connections just from people that I never would have imagined I would ever be talking to, like reaching out to me first to like pick my brain, or like, I mean, I've had multiple people just say like, work for me, like literally just like blah, blah, blah. And so it's expanding your surface area for luck. Like, the more you put out in the world, like the more attractive you become to like lucky things happening to you, if you will. And so like, Twitter is probably like the number one magnet for opportunities and like lucky things to occur in your life.
So what advice are you giving to someone who's just starting out and maybe they don't have the Morning Brew connections, mm-hmm. but what are you telling them to get them to start using Twitter the right way and start tweeting the right way from your perspective?
This is a question I get fairly frequently, and like, my answer is a little unpopular because it doesn't have to do with Twitter. It's the only reason why I had the opportunity to write a thread about what I learned from running Morning Brew social media, is because I did all these other steps that got me to Morning Brew, and that like gave me this stamp of approval and gave me like a certain air of like, it gave me validity. And so like, the advice would be, you do something in the real world first, and then that gives you something to talk about on social media. Like, you can't create Twitter content if like, there's nothing, you, like, you're not doing anything interesting. That's not, I don't mean that to sound harsh. But like, the easiest way to create good content on social media is to do something interesting in real life. So yeah, that's my advice, if you will, is like, focus on doing, creating, or building something in the real world that then you can talk about on social media, and that's how you'll begin to attract followers on there.
Makes complete sense. Now, for like someone crafting a specific tweet, what are the advice that you'd give for someone, just a regular tweet in general?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some advice that I was giving to actually Alex, our CEO, like, he had like 50,000 followers on LinkedIn and like was killing it on LinkedIn with like this very kind of LinkedIn style, if you will. And then for the longest time on Twitter, like, he wasn't great. And like, he didn't have nearly the same amount of following, like his tweets weren't really doing numbers. And so the advice I gave him was, send a few tweets from your phone instead of like your computer, because like, tweeting from your phone puts you in a mindset that like removes kind of like the LinkedIn type of writing. Like, it's hard to craft this like beautifully written thing on your phone, just because like, one, you're used to texting, you're used to talking in a very authentic manner on it. And then two, it's just like hard physically, like it's hard to type. So it's kind of a hack, but imagine tweeting from your phone all the time, which produces more relatable, more human sounding, more authentic sounding content. And that will help you kind of like develop your Twitter voice a little bit. And then now I don't send every tweet from my phone, but it's a helpful exercise to kind of get yourself in like the Twitter voice that resonates with people. And then Alex, to his credit now, he now has way more followers than me and like has left me behind. So he's clearly figured it out. But yeah, that's kind of like a little hack, I guess, if you want to like work on your Twitter voice.
I love that. So how do you deal with, as someone who seems from my perspective to go viral so often and to have so many great tweets, how do you deal with the low times of like, let's say 3 days in a row when your tweets aren't popping off? I don't know if that's happened to you, but how do you deal with that and think about that and stay level-headed?
I mean, that's where perspective helps, where like, it's not the end of the world if you have 3 days of bad tweets. And like, as much as, yeah, you just try not to let yourself be dominated by that. And like, I've struggled with it because like, I've slowed down in growth and like have taken a step back to like, or like, what do I want to use Twitter for? Like, I came out of the gates really hot and like all these people were, yeah. And so then it's like, eventually it cools down. Like you're no longer like the new cool, like new kid on the block for so long. So yeah, again, it's just been like a process I've been working through and trying to get to a point where I know for sure, like what it is I want my like Twitter to provide and like what I want to do in social media in general, like the directions I want to go. So it being like intentional and having like a guiding, kind of like a guiding perspective or a direction, a North Star of what you want your social media to achieve kind of helps you weather like the miniature ups and downs of social content creation.
What's your North Star?
I'm developing it, but I think my North Star is going to be helping turn people from me before I've had like this year of experience into where I kind of am at now. It's not like I'm the prominent social media voice, but there's so many things now that I wish I had known before I was starting out. And so if I can just like provide, like create a timeline or create value for myself 10 months ago, like that seems like a good spot for me. And I'd love to like really do it officially, like release courses and like actually build an ecosystem for people to figure out, get to point A to point B without like having to go through like the trials and tribulations that I did.
What are some of the things that you would tell yourself 10 months ago that you haven't mentioned so far?
I would tell myself, one, just don't get so caught up in everything like early on. Like, I mean, you've touched on it a lot of times, but I definitely got way too wrapped up early on with the highs and the lows. So I would say, get your head out of the sand, like get your head out of your ass. Like you're not hot shit and you're also not shit. So definitely weather those storms. And then, yeah, I would say double down on Threads. Like Threads are literally like I kind of had a sense of that right when I posted my first about. I'm like, oh, like this is how you grow. But like Threads have achieved like 90% of the growth on my account. So like I would definitely put a lot of time and effort into kind of developing that muscle. But yeah, there's just so many like little tiny things that just, you just kind of pick up along the way, that hopefully I can continue to put out into the world for people to consume.
How do you manage the growth side of things? Like you want the numbers to go up, you're on Twitter for the numbers to go up, but at the same time, realizing that there's a human being on the other end of the screen. How do you balance those and think about that?
So you're saying like, how do I manage like my growth expectations and like balance being a person?
Just that, like, you want the numbers to go up and you're like, okay, I have 10,000 followers and now I want to have 15,000, whatever it may be. But at the same time, like, those 5,000 people are like people, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How do you think about that? And like growth versus like human beings?
Yeah. It, that's where kind of like the DMs come in into play. So like the only time where people change from being a number to like a person in my mind is if they like interact with me, basically. Like you went from someone who I like, you were following me, I was following you. Eventually, like we started colliding, and eventually like we got into the DMs. And so like, not every person needs to, not every follower you have, you need to like think of them as a person. If like they're not, well, it's true. Like you don't necessarily need to connect with every person that follows you, but like when the connections do arise and when people transform from being a number to a person, I mean, that is where like the magic of Twitter is happening. So yeah, like as soon as something gets moved to the DMs or it, you start exchanging ideas like in responses or something, that's when they become humans. And I don't think it's horrible to think of like the other, whatever 99% that don't interact with me on a daily basis. I'm okay with not like thinking of them as like a human being, if you will. It's an interesting, I don't know if I'm coming across as exactly how I want to. But yeah, definitely you give more attention, you give more thought to the people who make an effort to make an attempt to connect with you. Just like this exact conversation is an example of that.
Yeah. And what other things have happened in Twitter DMs that you can share that just blew your mind, or you're like, how did that happen? Or how am I in this situation?
Yeah. I mean, I've just had some like, I don't know if I should mention like specific names, but like some, there was one like prominent person in like the investing and like a prominent founder. I had like tweeted this thing about like VCs, like not knowing what VCs do on a daily basis. And then first hilarious. Of all, like Naval had like responded to it, which was like fun because like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Naval is Naval.
What'd he say?
He's like, I don't know either. Basically. He's like, we don't do anything. And it was just like, it was like in typical Naval fashion. It was like 3 days after the tweet had sent at like midnight West Coast time. And you're just like, what are you doing up? Like, what are you doing, Naval? But so like, that was like a crazy moment. But then another prominent like founder like had basically stole my tweet and like posted the exact same tweet. And I was surprised so many people like came to my defense and like started tagging me and saying like, blah, 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 Toby. And like, I knew he didn't steal it. Like he was like making a joke. Like it had become like a semi-viral tweet to the fact that like most people in his community like had probably seen it. And so like him tweeting it is like him saying like, I don't know what I do every day. But so then he like DM'd me and said like, yeah, like, I hope you know, like it's a joke. And I was like, I'm just happy like we're talking right now, like steal my jokes as much as you want. So it was just like this crazy, it was just like the most Twittery thing to ever happen of just like one tweet led to this. And like now I'm connected with this guy and like have a relationship with him just because like he stole one of my tweets in quotations. So that's just like a classic Twitter. You just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Incredible. Where is Toby Howell 5 years from now? Where do you see your vision?
I would love to have the biggest pain point that people come to me with is like, I want to find a you. Basically, like, where do I find someone? Can like one, like, do you want to work for me? And two, if not, do you know anyone who would? And I never have a good answer for that. Like I never have people who I think would fill their role. And so like, I would love to start creating those people and like helping those companies out and like helping people basically become desirable for companies to work in. So I would love to create like, it's a Toby school of like social media, if you will, where you train people in to become good like social media professionals and then match them with companies and like even train them specifically for that company and maybe consult with that company for a while. That's something where I think there's a huge opportunity and like one that I can uniquely capitalize on. So that's definitely, I don't like, hopefully I have that up and running in 5 years, but that's on the near term and semi long-term plan right now.
What are some of the 3 to 5 things that you're teaching at that school, the core components that you would preach and practice?
It would probably be one, like how to grow an account. Like, I know it sounds kind of like non-teachable, but there are certainly ways you can go from like 0 to 100, then 100 to 1,000. And like, that's like a teachable skill. 2 is probably building a community around like your brand or your personal brand. And again, it sounds kind of like fortune cookie. Like, what does building a community mean? But I just wrote a thread about it. Like, there's very, very small, like micro things you can do that builds a community. 3 would be like developing a voice and like how to create a voice that like works for your brand. 4 would be how to be seen as a brand that like provides value beyond just being promotional. Like, so many brands fall into the trap of just link farming and just like, here's a deal, blah, blah, blah. And just completely ignore what social media is for. So just like how to be a desirable, like people will follow you for their brand. They won't follow you just for the brand. They will follow you because you have an interesting social media presence. So like how to distinguish between the two and like break them up. That's 4. So
that's perfect.
There'll be more, but yeah, these are the type of kind of big categories with like a lot of very like actionable advice underneath them. Cause that's what I think is missing the most from like these courses, if you will. It's like, it's all too vague and it's all like you want to like interact with followers. Like, that's not advice. Like, that's not going to help you, anybody telling like, hey, interact with people. You have to know who to interact with, like how the, which type of interactions like people respond to. So just like creating actionable advice instead of like fortune cookie advice is my biggest priority.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because one of your tweets that really resonated with me, and it's definitely something that I've been guilty of doing in the past, and I didn't even realize I was doing it until you pointed it out, was you had this tweet that said, don't tell people to sleep well, exercise, meditate, make to-do lists, set goals. Tell them the pillow you use, the workouts you complete, the mantras you practice, the things on your to-do list, and what your goals are. And it was a big, like, oh, that obviously that's right. But I never thought about it like that. And that's exactly what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can sum it up as like show, don't tell. Like, it's a classic like writing thing as well. Like, instead of saying how saying the person felt happy, show that they felt happy. Yeah, it's always a hard thing, because like I struggle with, it's hard to constantly find actionable things to like tell people. And like there's some times where I just want to tweet out like a platitude, if you will, like, because it's like vaguely true, but I'm like, is this really going to provide value to people? So I fall into like kind of banal platitudes from time to
rip
time. It's okay. It's okay. But like the best, the most valuable content is like showing people, here's what I did. Here's how I did it. Here's what I learned from it. And like, here's what you should take away. Like, that little flow of information is always going to be the most valuable advice or valuable content you can create on social media.
Yeah. And I just want to go back to community real quick. You mentioned that as part 2 of your social media school community. What are some of the things you think about building community in general?
Yeah, a big part of community is, again, kind of done. Okay, well, I'll start like on a very small thing. Like Morning Brew, when I first got there, I wanted there to be like a visual signal that you associate with Morning Brew. And I stole it from Andrew Yang. Like, Andrew Yang, when he was running for president, like everybody who was in the Yang gang on Twitter had the baseball hat like next to their Twitter name. Mm-hmm. And it was based off of like a visual cue. Like, he wore the hat a lot. And so like just that sort of community building, that as soon as you saw someone else with a baseball hat, you automatically knew they were associated with Andrew Yang. That to me was something that's incredibly powerful. That's a visual community builder. And so like the coffee cup emoji, I told a few people in the company, like, hey, I want to like put these next to our names. Like this is going to become our visual identity. And then like the coolest thing that started happening is every time a new hire was like getting, we've hired like 40 or 50 people since I've been here. Like it's been crazy. And every time a new hire joins, they automatically have started putting the coffee cup emoji in their bio. That's without me telling or anybody telling them to.
You didn't even haze them yet.
What'd you say?
You didn't even haze them yet.
You're right. I know. Like I didn't know, no sort of like you're part of the crew now type thing. It's just like, one, we are a desirable crew to want to join. Like people want to be part of like our community. And then two, that has become so tied to our identity, like our community, that it's now taking on a life of its own. And like, that is the community now. So like, that's just been such a powerful like community builder. That was something that started out as a small thing, but just like grew and took on a life of its own.
Yeah. And I love what you said about taking that from Andrew Yang and stealing it, because the best ideas are already out there, and it's just up to you to take them to your own devices and use them in your own way.
Right.
Do you have anything to add to this conversation? This has been incredible fun, my man. Incredible.
Yeah. No, this was awesome. Like I love the specifics of the questions you've asked. Like it's clear you did do a deep dive, which is awesome. But yeah, I going back to the 75 hard thing, like I would love to develop like a 75 hard for social media, if you will. This is other people have thought about it, but just like, if you can help extend that discipline to like social media, like that's going to be a very valuable thing, a program that can help people get over that initial fear of posting. So maybe we'd be on the lookout for that, because that might be percolating down the timeline soon.
Oh man. Well, you got me thinking, what are some of the things that you're putting on your 75 hard to-do list for a day-to-day basis for if you're starting that program for social media?
I mean, a lot of it's going to be based on like consistent posting habits, like developing that posting muscle. But yeah, then a lot of it is also consuming good content, like creating a good content diet for yourself, because like there's so much noise out there, and you can have just such a cluttered and unproductive timeline. So creating going on like a social media diet where you really trim down your timeline and like make sure it's serving the purpose you want it to. Those are some things that might find its way into the program.
Nice. And for the content diet, how do you filter and make sure that what you're consuming is high quality?
Just kind of, there's two types of scrolling in mind. In my mind, there's the scrolling, the mindless scrolling, where it's just a habit. You pick up your phone, you scroll just because you want your brain to go into that like haze of like getting small dopamine hits. Like you don't want to think about anything else. And then there's the scrolling where I'm actively like looking for ideas and actively consuming the content, thinking, how can I bring this into my area or my niche? And so like starting with an intentional division between those two types of scrolling will then help you kind of weed out which accounts are not providing you any value for that second type. So just like making sure you are conscious and aware of what you are achieving when you are going on social media, that's like a good place to start and to base your dieting off of, if you will.
What are some of your favorite things that you lean on when you're looking for good resources or good people to follow or good websites, whatever it may be? Do you have any go-tos?
I mean, right now the content I'm consuming the most is, I've just been binging Tim Ferriss, his podcast. I mean, that's a little outside social media, but like that is just, hearing very smart and very successful and very interesting people talk about what made them smart, successful, and interesting, like that's always going to be a formula for success. So yeah, I just love getting across niches, if you will. Like I you can learn so much by analyzing something entirely removed from your sweet spot, if you will. So like I always try to explore different niches on Twitter and then explore different niches in my life too. Because it just leads to more generative thinking and like more creative output.
I love it, man. Where can people find you if they want more Toby in their life after this incredible conversation?
I mean, you can follow me on Twitter at Toby Doy Howell. I'm not going to drop the Instagram handle. That's a little more, I haven't quite upped my Instagram game yet. But then also follow Morning Brew on Twitter and Instagram at Morning Brew for both.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Toby, for your time. This has been incredible and a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was awesome.
That was my conversation with Toby Howell. If you enjoyed it or have any thoughts or feedback about it, let me know on Twitter at HeyDannyMiranda is the best place to do that. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening until the final seconds. I appreciate you tremendously, and I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.